So just continuing here with part three. Just a very, very few things we're going to look at, and then we'll end because it's getting late. So a few challenges. Of course, the biggest thing people will complain about is we don't have time. No, what are we going to do with time? So here's a quote from Henry Mintzberg. Henry Mintzberg is one of the leading world authorities on management and organizational science. And I really like Mintzberg because he looks at different structures of organizations and particularly different structures even of religious and nonprofit versus corporate organizations. But he makes this point that it's easy, especially when you're a manager, to just have lots of work and lots of interruptions and quickly respond to everything and just to do everything abruptly. And we can ask, you know, what are we so busy with? And we end up just thinking short term instead of long term. We just sort of respond to what's going on today. Now, it's really nice that in the past few years, at the international GBC level and to a lot of extent on local levels, we're becoming interested in strategic planning. So doing these sort of scans is a part of strategic planning. And it really, otherwise, you know, by the time you notice there's a trend in society, everybody else has followed it, and we're lagging behind. You know, sometimes 10 years behind, 5 years behind. So in order to really think strategically and in order really to have an impact, we have to be beyond busy. And then I have some examples when Vasudev told Nanda Maharaj there was going to be trouble in Gokula. Right? He was obviously doing an environmental scan. It wasn't just like he had some mystic power and knew about Putana, but because he was involved in the government there in Mathura, he was able to scan and understand there's something going on. The example, of course, about Lord Ramachandra. How did he know about the washerman criticizing him? He went out into the populace, was finding out information. And we mentioned Krishna also, that Narada Muni saw Krishna going out as a spy and finding out what was really going on in his environment. So we can just take a couple minutes. Another challenge that somebody brought up is how do we find a team? Do we really have enough intelligent Brahmins in our movement to create a team? So I hope so. And if you don't, then start with what you have. Start with what you have. Start with what you have. Even if it's just you. Even if it's just you and you dedicate that I'm going to spend, you know, 5-10 minutes a day, or I'm going to spend a half an hour a week, or really trying to understand what's happening, what are the trends, and what are the drivers. That, in many cases, would be a huge step forward. If you can form even a small team, then do that. Just be aware, if you're doing it yourself, if you have a small team, that you are going to run into the problem of biases, much more so than if you have a diverse team. That there's things you're going to miss. But better something than nothing. And I think, you know, gradually we can start building, at least on a continental basis, I think we can end up with a team of 10 or 12 people who did this as part of their regular service to the movement. So those are the challenges that we're looking at. And then, of course, getting out some information. So I don't want to take too long because it's already almost 9 o'clock. But any particular questions or discussions anyone would like to bring up? Yes, sir.
Just on the point you made about finding team members within ISKCON, I think I agree with you that we do have the skills. I believe we have the skills and we have the people to do it. But I think what happens is, especially in leadership, is that you're scared. It's a matter of finding those skilled people that are out there, but generally as a leader, most people go with what they know. So they're scared to maybe look outside of their sphere or outside of their box, because they're scared of failing. They're scared of not delivering what they're supposed to. But sometimes I think we need to be a bit risky and give an opportunity to someone that you may just see a glimpse of, has an attribute that you need, And yeah, you may fail the first time, but a good leader is about picking that person up and encouraging them to try again.
That's a really good point. Really, the opposite is true, though. If we don't want to fail, then the best way to fail is just to keep doing things exactly the way you've been doing them. Because physical nature is endlessly mutable. Oldest of all, but a new dress, miracle done, your divine grace. That was Prabhupada's Vyas Puja offering to Bhaktisiddhanta. Oldest of all, but a new dress, miracle done, your divine grace. So if we really want to fail, then we keep presenting things exactly the same way. And then we will definitely fail. Because they won't be relevant and they won't be relatable. You know, if you're not relevant and relatable, it's kind of like having a great gift in a mislabeled package. It just doesn't get there. So this requires education for people to know if you're afraid of failure, then you have to adapt to time, place, and circumstance. Prabhupada says it's required both to keep the essence and to adapt. And you can't adapt if you don't know. It's kind of like, how do you know how to dress if you don't know what the weather is? You don't. No, so it's something like that. But I do agree that we do have people in positions of leadership who think that the best way to be pure is to do things exactly the way Prabhupada did them in 1966. So we do have that. Anyway, just smile at people like that and offer your obeisances and go on. Any other questions? Yes.
Yes, Prabhu has a question that, as you told, that preaching 10 years ago is not a good preaching now. Because of the word, of course, it degraded, and it has to be, or actions in preaching also degrade a little bit, because we don't want to degrade ourselves. That how can we be proactive on that field, still keep preaching in that very changed environment?
Okay, so when the world gets more degraded, how do we adapt without also becoming degraded? Remember, you're not trying to match the actions or the trends. What you're trying to do is deal with the drivers. So when you're scanning, you're looking for what are people doing, talking about, etc. You're not trying to match that. Then you look beyond that and you find trends. You're not trying to match the trends. You want to look under the trends and find what are the drivers. How are you going to find the drivers? By connecting with Krishna. And then you've got to connect with Krishna. My dear Lord Krishna, how are we going to preach this message to you? I don't have it with me, or I play it for you. It's on my external drive back at Lumiana Temple. But it's this lovely meditation on Prabhupada's prayer when he arrived in America. And he said, everyone is seeking passion and ignorance. How am I going to get them to understand this message? And just like Prabhupada started the Sunday Love Feast. There's no Sunday Love Feast in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Is there? Is there a Sunday Love Feast in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu? Does Rupa Goswami list that as one of the angas of bhakti? Did he list that as an example? No. Now, Prabhupada was finding a way, because why did he call it a love feast? Because the hippies were having be-ins and love-ins, and, right? So Prabhupada called it a love feast. Why did he do it on Sunday? Because he came to a Christian country, and people were having religious gatherings on Sunday. There's nothing in our Vaishnava tradition about Sunday, is there? Is there? Nothing. But that's not that Prabhupada became degraded. But he had a way of presenting that responded to the environment, that responded to what people were looking for. Or we want to have a love feast. And we already associate Sunday with doing something religious and something spiritual. Now, see, again, you want to look at the drivers. What's driving trends? What's pushing people to do what they're doing? And then you want to give people real solutions. We believe, at least theoretically, that Krishna consciousness has all the solutions to everything. We say this, yes?
Yes.
Krishna consciousness will solve all of your problems. So I believe that. If I believe that, then I should be able to demonstrate that. I should be able to take any problem and show how it's solved by Krishna consciousness. Now, problems are basically the same from the beginning of time. But they appear differently, and they come in different forms, and they come in different flavors. And therefore, you can't present Krishna consciousness as solving the problems of 1970. They're really the same problems, birth, death, old age, and disease, and adiatmic, adidaivic, adivotic, but they're coming in a different way. And therefore, the way you present, here's the problem, here's the solution, is going to be a different fit. Doesn't mean that you become degraded. But you want to find out, again, you're looking at the drivers. What you're looking for is what's below the behaviors is the trends. What's below the trends is the drivers. How do you have something that's addressing those drivers? Does that make sense? Excellent question. Anybody else?
I have a question, but I'm wondering whether it's correct. Because, like you said, it was just the drivers, but now I'm thinking like the driver of the trend that people are, let's say, eating, let's say, cooked food, right? That they don't have time because they work all day. But then maybe that's not the driver.
No, it's the drivers are busyness. Definitely excessive busyness, and also just the pervading availability. As Prabhupada said, that formerly people couldn't, they wouldn't even be right buying rice at the market, they had to grow it.
Yeah, just think about just like practical things, even in ISKCON, that we have leaders who actually, their services are just like part-time job. It's not even a part-time job. It's just something they do additionally.
Mm.
Because they have to work to maintain family.
Yes, this is happening more and more.
So we have many, many leaders like that, and they cannot actually focus fully and devote the quality time to even, you know, doing management or strategic planning, as you said, because they have other things that are more substantial on that level.
Mm-hmm. So then looking at that honestly, and then it's a question, that's why this has to be done by brahmanas. And then prayer and meditation and brainstorming, you know, fighting with that jar asunder for 28 days with all your whatever strength, and then going, no, shaktuham jar asunder, you know, that has to be there too. Krishna, help me. How do we do this? How do we have a team that does strategic planning when everybody works? I was just at a temple where I saw it being done. I was just at a temple where everybody is a part-timer, no full-time people, and the amount of strategic planning and working together and building is just unbelievable. In Houston, unbelievable. You're just like, wow. Amazing. And like they called for us to come there. I work with this group called Goloka Education to start a school. And I think I can say it's the most intelligently started school I've seen in our movement. They're doing it so professionally. And they did a lot of the scanning to find out what people's educational needs are, and what were the educational trends of the devotees, of the community in general. And although they're all part-timers, they've come together in a team to do scanning, to do strategy, and to work out the program. So they found a way to do it. They found a way to do it that's different from what we did in 1983. And that's different from a temple where you have all full-time leaders. And it works for their particular situation. And this school is part of their long-term strategy to build a community. You know, the leader figured out that if I want to build a community, I have to have a school. Like, yeah. Never going to build a community without a school. So, you know, he's thinking in terms of what are the needs of the people in my community. So it's not that it can't be done, it's just that it has to be done differently. It has to be done differently. So this requires some flexibility in thinking, and I really believe it requires some very good sadhana and some very deep meditation and very deep prayer. But that doesn't mean you go into a mountain cave and you just pray. You know. Bhima didn't just stand on the side and say, okay, Krishna, use your shakti and just zap him. You know, Bhima went in there with his fists and his club, yes? So both have to be there. And we, you know, we're going to look at this also Thursday and Friday morning, Krishna, when we look at organizational culture. You know, we tend to think it has to be done this way. That's the only way it can be done. And that's not reality. But that's a very good point. Yes?
I was just thinking that we are analyzing the trends and the drivers. It's a kind of reactive approach. Did the ISKCON ever have been trendsetters?
Ooh.
You know,
wow.
Can we become...
Can we become the trendsetter? Of course.
Yes,
of course.
Did we in the past already?
Well, yes, we certainly have. We certainly have. And part of being able to be a trendsetter is looking... Okay, let's see if I can find this. I think ISKCON's been a trendsetter with vegetarianism. That would be really nice. So when we look back here, right, emerging issues before they become trends. Of course, see, the difficulty is that most of the emerging issues don't become trends. Only some of the emerging issues become trends, which is why you can't focus all your attention here. But if we really want to become trendsetters, we also want to notice some of the emerging issues. How we can relate that to Krishna consciousness, and then how we can set a trend. And we have somebody here who's doing that. At least one person that I know of. That said, okay, there's already emerging trend towards organic. Let's set our own trend with ahimsa. You follow? Let's create a demand for ahimsa products beyond organic. If we do that, we will have been trendsetters, but it's riding on the emerging issues. What emerging issues is it riding on? The whole vegan movement. And a lot of people become vegan for health, but a lot of people become vegan as a response to violence.
But hasn't it become a trend
already? Ahimsa products? No. Yes, but that the vegan is starting to become a trend, but we can then start a trend of ahimsa products. You know, just like in the biggest supermarkets in the world, there's an organic department now. I mean, the biggest agribusiness supporting places have organic aisle. Why not an ahimsa aisle? Why not a karma-free aisle? Right? I mean, that's something where we could capture something that's an emerging issue. I don't think vegan has become a trend yet. I'd say at this point it's still an emerging issue. It's not mainstream. It's starting to become a trend. But sure, why not? We haven't been that good at it because we don't even notice anything until it gets all the way over here, you know? It's like we're the, in many cases... In many cases, we are the laggards. Laggards, you're just... This is a laggard. You're all the way at the end of the parade, you know. It's like we didn't notice that kirtan was becoming a thing until it was already a thing for years. mean, the ebook thing just, you know, for years, the BBT International, they send out this email whenever they have a meeting. What do you suggest? Ebooks, please. 10 years. So, and even now, when I talk to devotees who publish, and I said, be really nice if you publish ebooks. They're like, what? So, you know, we're the laggards. That we're just, we don't get these things. We kind of, oh, yeah, everybody's been doing that. And we kind of lost the momentum of it. Anybody else? Yes, Prabhu.
Sometimes we see that, you know, when we were young and enthusiastic and we wanted to preach, we would come up with lots of ideas, particularly within Islam. Sometimes within our society, when we're very young, we come up with lots of enthusiasm, and we want to do lots of preaching programs. So there's a bit of passion still, and you know we create lots of different programs, and we may use this particular sort of method to do those things. But sometimes there may be a danger that we may become shooting stars going in too many different directions. How do we protect ourselves, or how do we make sure that things are aligned to the principles, the purposes that Prabhupada set us?
I really like this model, and I think this model solves that problem. I think it solves the problem on several levels. First of all, you don't just do this. You don't just go, okay, let's start a new system. But first, you pay attention to what people are doing, what they're talking about. You understand the drivers, and you connect with Krishna. You connect with Sadhu Shastra Guru. You connect with Sadhu Shastra Guru. I mean, one thing I notice happening more and more in ISKCON is we don't study Sadhu Shastra Guru, we don't know Sadhu Shastra Guru, and we just do anything. The concept that we have to be connected with Sadhu Shastra Guru is sort of waning in many places. So it's real connect. That means we have, you know, deep spiritual practice, not just superficial spiritual practice, not just snick, snick, nom, nom, I finish my rounds. You know, okay, I'm a good devotee. 16, all right, done for the day. You know, but to become really deep devotees so that we really are connected with Krishna, we really are meditating on Krishna, that we really, you know, one of the wonderful things about Ljubljana is, my God, you're offering Bhaktivedanta degrees. You know, the devotees there are really studying Srila Prabhupada's with the manner. You know, they're really studying Srila Prabhupada's books. Some temples I go to, you just ask a simple question from the books and everyone's like, huh? In what chapter of Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say that? And they're just like, what? So, you know, to really study and really chant and really connect, and then prototype. Take a small sample and try. You know, when Prabhupada first started ISKCON, Prabhupada prototyped a lot of things, some of which didn't work. Prabhupada was willing to prototype and try. Like at one point he said, okay, we'll have women's ashrams and the women will support themselves by painting pictures of Krishna and selling them. It didn't work. But it was an idea that he tried. Okay, well let's try this. Prabhupada tried many different ways of financing Gurukula, for example. And some of them worked and some of them didn't. And Prabhupada wasn't afraid to try something on a small scale and prototype it and see how it worked and then decide if he wanted to replicate it or not. So I see this as, you know, if you follow this, I really don't see how you... Oh, somehow that goes off the screen. I really don't see how it's going to be a problem. You know, the problem is when you just jump over here and just, okay, now we're just going to do this everywhere. Okay, everybody, now we're just going to do this. Because if you make a prototype and it's a failure, some of them are going to be failures. So what? It's on a small scale. It doesn't have a big effect. And that should, and even the failure is really just more, it's not really a failure, it's more information for how to adjust. You take the results back and you say, okay, we're going to adjust this way and that way. Now, I don't think we should be afraid to try things on a small scale and fail. You know, or tried to start the League of Devotees in Jhansi. And, I mean, it had some success, but overall it was a failure. But that indicated to Srila Prabhupada, oh, I shouldn't do this in India. I should do it in the West and bring it back to India. It gave him a different model. Is that all right? Anybody else before we call it a day?
I have a question.
Okay, good. Yes, for me.
I have a question connected with this, because this point enthusiastic, you know, and sometimes we forget to be enthusiastic on the each level, you know. Is it how it connects with what you speak about?
Yes, be enthusiastic on each thing, not just one thing.
Yes, because Prabhupada told that efficient work is if you are enthusiastic, have enthusiasm, that means that you never sort of down, that it's good to be enthusiastic. And sometimes, this is my experience, if some person is enthusiastic and some is too much brahminika, this is not working.
Well, it's interesting. In the mode of goodness, you have enthusiasm and determination that's unbreakable. In the mode of passion, enthusiasm and determination is according to the fruits. If it looks like you're going to get a good fruit, you're enthusiastic. If it looks like you're not going to get a good fruit, you're not enthusiastic. And if you're really in the mode of ignorance, then you don't even get out of bed. But in the mode of goodness is unbreakable determination that's steadfast in success and failure. That the determination in the mode of goodness is really coming from that connection with Krishna at every moment. The determination in the mode of goodness is not looking at a fruit. The fruit is that Krishna is smiling at me now, and Krishna is smiling at me now, and Krishna is smiling at me now, and Krishna is smiling at me now. That's the determination in the mode of goodness. And if I just try to please Krishna now, and now, and now, and now, and now, success or failure is in his hands. And that's not what's driving me. What's driving me is trying to please him now, because that's all I ever have is the now. And that kind of determination and that kind of enthusiasm has nothing to do with externals. It's not the mode of passion. It's not undirected. It's very directed. And even if there's external failures, it doesn't matter. Srila Prabhupada had his handwritten manuscript on his Bhagavad Gita commentary stolen. I tell you, if Krishna had somebody steal my 1,000-page handwritten commentary, I would quit. I would not write another one. I'd say, well, I guess it's Krishna's arrangement, and I wouldn't write another one. And Prabhupada, this to me is inconceivable. I can't fathom it. I just can't fathom it. How do you handwrite a 1,000-page commentary and then it gets stolen and you write it again? That is enthusiasm beyond sattva guna. Now, that's beyond sattva guna. So that's, we shouldn't think that enthusiasm means mode of passion. Mode of passion, enthusiasm is intense endeavor for a fruit, for enjoying the fruit, and if the fruit doesn't work out, then you're depressed and you don't have enthusiasm. But real enthusiasm is on a different level. Real enthusiasm is something that's steady and balanced. And it comes from, I'm trying to please Krishna now, and now, and now, and now, and now, and now, and now. And we just observed the anniversary of the leaving of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And especially when I was, you know, because he left his body in a car crash like 3 months before he would have finished his PhD. And especially in my last semester of my PhD, every time I got in the car, I was like, this could be it. It doesn't matter. You could say, you know, he never got the fruit. It didn't matter because he was always, you know, every minute he was offering to Srila Prabhupada. It wasn't just that you're offering the finished product. You're offering it every minute. This is for you, Krishna. This is for you.
Can I connect a little bit to what we are actually doing here?
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Meaning the projects we're working on, right?
So absolutely.
It would, from my observation, it would seem that we are even more with passion in square. Because we are really fruit-oriented, right? We get impressed when, let's say, the TP doesn't send a document, they don't allow us to have another organization founded because of something they don't trust. So how does this?
How do we do that? Well,
so how, is it good what we're doing, actually?
It's not what you're doing, it's the consciousness about what you're doing. Arjuna was on the battlefield. And Krishna says, fight for the sake of fighting without considering gain or loss, victory or defeat, honor or dishonor. When you're fighting, you got to be fighting to win. I mean, what kind of a fighter would you be? When I was in South Africa, they have some restaurants called Wimpy all over the place. But at least in America, Wimpy means like... No, you couldn't be a wimpy fighter. Oh, there's an enemy. I think I might shoot them. Oh, missed. Oh, well. you can't fight like that. You know, you've got to be really focused and you... Right? You're trying to win. You're trying for victory. But yet Krishna says, fight without thinking about victory. So how do you do that? We have to be working for some fruit. See, when you're working for a fruit like what you're talking about, then you're doing sacrifice, 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 fruit. Sacrifice, 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 fruit. And sometimes you get to the fruit and there's no fruit. The birds ate it, you know, somebody else got it, it's sour. But even when you get the fruit, you know, you enjoy it for a minute, and then you just focus on the next fruit. That means most of your life is work, sacrifice, work, sacrifice. You have occasional happiness. That's more passion. And it's all future-oriented. The biggest illusion is future, because it's never the future. At least the past has some reality. But the future has no reality. It's never the future. So if you're future-oriented, and all you're thinking about is the fruit, whew, almost impossible to connect with Krishna. I mean, you can do a kind of karma yoga where you're fruit-oriented and you offer the fruit to Krishna. That's something. But instead, connect with Krishna now. Am I pleasing Krishna now? How do I please Krishna now? One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor, who is equal poise in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety. He for whom no one is put into difficulty, who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equal to friends and enemies. One who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is detached from the auspicious and the inauspicious. That's... Such a person is very dear to me. Such a person is very dear to me. Such a person is very dear. Every day I start off my day by meditating Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12, text 13 to 20. What will make Krishna smile? Because he says, you do this, you're dear to me. You do this, you're... He says, he doesn't make a secret of it. You don't have to like guess. I wonder how I'm going to make Krishna happy. He tells you, if you do this, you'll make me happy. So that's what Krishna's looking at. Krishna's not looking at, did you get the $80 billion? I still got fixated on that amount you guys had up there. You know? It was $80 billion available. I'm like, €80, not dollars, euros. €80 billion, that's a lot more than $80 billion. It's not whether you get the 80 billion euros or not. In the larger scheme of things, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Really, what matters is that we all love Krishna. Now, if we have the 80 billion euros, it makes it so much easier for us to print books and build temples. And I mean, I was thinking this morning, if I had 80 billion euros, what would I do with that? But that's, I don't think I'll ever have that problem. But that's not the issue. That's not what makes our life a success. It's not building a temple. It just isn't. It's, do I love Krishna? And you know what? I can love Krishna right now. He's right here. He's in our heart. He's in every atom. He's the light in all luminous objects. He's our breath of life. He's our digestive fire. Why can't I love him right now? And if I love him right now, then I'm always happy. I'm not dependent on fruit. And no one can take my happiness away. No mean people, no stingy grant committees, no town presidents who don't turn in their papers on time. You know, nobody can steal your happiness because Krishna's right there and you can be connected with him all the time. Not dependent on the auspicious or the inauspicious. Not dependent on the ordinary course of events. It doesn't matter. Everything's auspicious, you connect with Krishna. Everything's not auspicious, you connect with Krishna because Krishna's there. And then we just do this other. We try to build temples and distribute books and offer our flowers to Krishna and get the 80 billion euros. That's just part of being in Mahaprabhu's Leela. That's really what ISKCON's about. It's really Mahaprabhu's Leela. And then it's just an adventure. You know? It's just an adventure. And sometimes Krishna's captured by the demons temporarily. Right? Kaliya has Krishna in his coils, and Bakasura swallows Krishna temporarily. You know? It can look like that. And Kamsa imprisons Vasudeva and Devaki. I mean, if we're planning on being, we're all planning on being Krishna's Leelas, yes?
Yes.
So this is our practice. Seriously. It's not just that in our next life when we go to the universe where Krishna has his Leela, that we're being trained right now if we think about it like that. And think about it. ISKCON's part of Mahaprabhu's Leela. I'm in ISKCON. That means if I have the right consciousness, I mean, you can be officially in ISKCON and be who knows where you are. You know, if you're officially a member of ISKCON and all you do is criticize everybody, oh, that GBC did this and that home person did that and look at that pujari over there and that person. If you do that, then you're not, that's another thing. But, you know, you can be here and be part of Mahaprabhu's Leela and then it's just an adventure. It's just an adventure. Wow. And you know Krishna's going to win, but you don't know how he's going to win or where he's going to win. And you don't know what role you're going to play in it. And you may play a very little role and you may play a very big role. And Ravana may cut off your wings and talons and you may lie bleeding on the ground. And you never get to see Ravana's army being conquered. But you're so successful because Ram comes and says, thank you, Jatayu. And you're a failure. You're lying on the ground bleeding to death. And Ravana took Sita and you couldn't stop him. Which is a part of the Leela. Isn't that great? You're trying to keep the cows from running down Govardhan Hill to lick their calves, who are actually Krishna. Hey, get back here, you cows! And they were frustrated and angry and bewildered because they're pure devotees and they don't usually fail. And then they go down and they see their boys who are Krishna and it was all fine. And they're also part of the Leela. That failure of the cowherd men is part of the glorification of the cows. How much the cows love Krishna that they ran down Govardhan Hill. Would you want to run down Govardhan Hill? Oh my God. And the cowherd men are trying to stop them. So sometimes we're playing, you know, sometimes we're like the cows running to Krishna. Sometimes we're like the cowherd men. Hey, what are you doing? Send me that paper! All right? Is that all right? All right, Krishna. some flash drives. They're all.